So in this current moment, it's a big anti-Trump wave on Substack, but wait 5 minutes and it'll change.
Hamish, welcome to the Golden Age.
Thank you. Finally here in the Golden Age.
I know. I'm excited to have you. So tell me about the vision when you first started Substack in 2017. It feels like not many tech entrepreneurs were thinking about journalism back then, but you were. So tell me about it.
Well, it's two of us at the start, at the very start. Chris Best is the CEO of Substack and me. Chris is a tech guy, a product guy, and I was a journalist guy. And the vision was based on this essay that Chris had written, which was something he was doing for his own personal time, about how the incentives of the media system, because it was dominated by social media, were producing all these bad outcomes in society and corroding the quality of media generally. And we both saw that this was a big problem, but we weren't quite sure, like many people, what could be done about it, what was some positive way forward. But that led to a discussion between us that led us to conclude that the customer needed to change. Instead of the customer being an advertiser, as it is with social media, if we could change it, the system, so that the customer was the consumer, the person who reads or listens to or views the media, then you can change the whole culture of the media. And we were both subscribers to this publication called Stratechery, which is
really, I love it.
Yeah, Ben Thompson.
Ben Thompson, he's great. Out of his
spare bedroom, or was in Taiwan, Taipei. And he writes about the business models of technology companies. And he was making a great publication and a ton of money by publishing one free blog post each week and then giving people the opportunity to pay $100 a year to get three more posts from him by email. And our basic idea was, what if we made that easy for any writer to try? So we put that model into a box, basically, and that's what Substack is.
And what did your friends say when you were pitching them on this idea? Did they see the vision that you had?
There was a mixed response. There were some people who were pretty excited about it. One of the first people I went to was Bill Bishop, who became the Substack pioneer.
On China, right?
Yeah. So I'd been friendly and friends with Bill from my time living in Hong Kong and then a bit of reporting time in China because he was in Beijing. And I convinced him to be the first customer for Substack because he already had a newsletter that he was intending to take paid. So he really got it and was into it and said yes. And that went really well for us because we had a great start. And then other people were a little bit more skeptical. They'd be like, wow, there's so much free content online and so good. There's more than I can ever possibly read. Why am I going to pay for a single writer? Why am I going to pay for a newsletter? So we saw the range of responses, but we believed in the model. And so we thought we'd push on forward.
And so when you look at the ecosystem, what is the secret to getting someone to pay for a Substack? What is the type of, what is the threshold? What is the value that a writer has to bring to someone to get them paying subscribers?
Well, I think a lot of it is that people happily, not just begrudgingly or sort of dragging their feet, they'll happily pay for the writers who they most love or trust, or writers or podcasters or showmakers, video people. And it's not because they are getting content most of the time. It's because they want to be in a relationship with this media maker, not even a parasocial relationship, really, but they want to see the world through their eyes. They want that person to help them understand and make sense of the many complicated things that are going on in the world right now. And so the things that really matter from the publisher point of view is a particular worldview, a strong voice, and quality of thought.
And Substack, when people talk about Substack right now, a lot of the times people talk about it as a text-based product. But increasingly, we're seeing a lot of people like Jim Acosta, people from cable news coming over and launching video Substacks. The New Yorker today wrote about novels, the next great American novel coming from Substack. Can you talk to me about now the bigger vision beyond text, getting into video, getting into podcasting, even book publishing?
Yeah, and there's also a wave of people from TikTok and YouTube and Instagram jumping over to Substack as well, realizing that there is supreme power in having a space on the internet where you have direct relationships with your audiences and more control over your own destiny.
It's empowering. I mean, having launched a Substack a few weeks ago, I can tell you firsthand that that is the key driver for me, to own that audience relationship.
That's awesome to hear. I'm glad you're having that experience. Yeah, I think it is the critical shift in media as well. We've gone from this era of, well, traditional media where there are a few dominant winners in each market, to a chaos era of social media where there's anyone can have a voice, but it's still ultimately controlled by a few giant companies and giant rulers, to this new era where every creator, every publisher, every writer can have their own space and their own relationships, and they can go direct. And so, yeah, for us, we've never really thought about it as being just text. We started off pitching Substack as a place to start a paid email newsletter, because that was a very easy way to explain it to people in those early days. But we really quite quickly added audio after that. And so you could have a newsletter with a podcast. And then soon enough, we added video, and we're going deeper and deeper into video right now. So we're not trying to create a platform that is just for writing or just for text. Even many writers like to express themselves in multiple formats, and sometimes in video, sometimes in audio, sometimes in writing. And there's a community element that is really important as well. But the better way to think of it is, I think, is like, you don't just have a paid newsletter or a newsletter community. You have a channel. And on that channel, you might be publishing in audio, you might be publishing in video or text, and you get to choose each time how to express yourself. And then you can build those deep relationships where you own the subscriptions, and you can build your own media empire.
And when I get Substack emails in my inbox, it's always a joy. But at the same time, it can feel like, sometimes I subscribe to so many, it can feel like overload. How are you thinking about that as a product, to not have consumers be overwhelmed by the sheer number of Substacks that they subscribe to?
Well, you've got to get the app. The app is the way to create.
I know. I need to migrate.
Yeah, well, the app genuinely is a good space to spend your media time in. There's the snacking part of it, which is like, I'm scrolling the feed, looking for new people, new voices to find interesting and fall in love with, discover great pieces that I wouldn't have otherwise discovered because I wasn't already subscribed to them. And then there's the inbox, and you can sort that inbox with filters to make it your reading and consumption experience easier. So you can say, I just want to see the posts from the Substacks that I pay for, or I just want to see the posts that are like media posts with audio or video, or ones that I've just saved. There are other filtering tools coming that will make it even more powerful. But I think that is the best way to like make sense of the overload. But I don't actually think we're in a much different place because of Substack than we were with media as it existed before. Media consumption experiences were just even more distributed across TikTok and Instagram and Twitter and New York Times and New Yorker and CNN, et cetera. And now, actually, I think Substack might be helping to sort of solve that noise problem by giving you a way to make more intentional choices about what you let into your inbox and what you let into your mind, and then giving you one space to organize that experience.
When you talk to legacy media people, I think the thing that often comes up is Substack's got to figure out a way to bundle these newsletters. Is that something that you're thinking about at all? I mean, I know it's complicated because you want to let the creator own their audience, and if you're a bundler, that's kind of disaggregating that. But how are you thinking about bundling?
Yeah, I think there are ways to do bundling where you wouldn't break the direct relationship between the publisher and the subscriber, which is extremely important. It's a sacrosanct thing at the heart of Substack. We wouldn't want to do a Spotify type thing or a Netflix type thing where you pay Substack and then Substack has total control over what you see and who wins and who loses. I think we need to move out of that aggregation era. But that's not to say there aren't interesting bundling opportunities that would really work for the publishers and the consumers and the platform. Those things are possible. We're just a little ways away from that. The most important problem for us to solve at the moment is that most people in the world don't know about Substack. We need more people subscribing to one Substack. They're not all media nerds like you and me with like too many subscriptions. But those are good problems to try to solve. And I feel pretty good about our progress on that path.
And I'm curious, some Substacks almost feel completely outside of the Substack ecosystem. What comes to mind is the Free Press. I don't think many people, when they go to the site, the Free Press, would even recognize that it's a Substack necessarily. Right. Do you think we'll see more of that, this kind of Substacks that don't feel like the traditional Substack?
I think so. Well, Substack is a true platform. It's new land to build on, where anyone can come and create new media products. And the free press is one expression of that. Like, you might have the Bill Bishop experience. We're just subscribing to this one writer who's going to help me understand China. Or you might be subscribing to something that is positioning itself as the competitor to the opinion section of the New York Times, which is essentially what the free press is trying to build. And they have dozens of staff and editors and fact checkers and all the rest behaving like a media operation. And as we're maturing as a platform, we're starting to be able to flex to serve each one of those publisher types just as well. So we're nailing the individual subscribe to Bill Bishop thing. That's been our bread and butter for a long time. And on the kind of enterprise level, we call it, we're figuring out how to serve the larger institutions like the Free Press or Zateo or Dropsite News or the Bulwark or the Ankle or whatever. And I absolutely think you'll see a lot more of that. I don't think it's going to make sense really to start a new ambitious media project or business without being fully plugged into the Substack network, because the Substack network is a subscriptions machine that drives discovery for you in ways that other places don't anymore.
That's, you know, I've gotten a lot of subscribers via my friends who recommend me on their Substack, and that's something that I wouldn't be able to have on other platforms. You brought up the free press and fact checking. I'm curious. I think when Substack first launched, there was this narrative that they're just letting anyone write anything. But today, you don't read about that as much. How do you think about fact checking and free speech and the balance between that? What are the Substack policies?
Well, I think generally that when it comes to upholding media standards, which is the thing that I think people are most concerned about when they say, but what about the editors? What about the fact checkers, et cetera? Like, they shouldn't just let anyone write things. When it comes to upholding media standards, I think that's the responsibility and the opportunity for the publishers. And so when there's new land to build on, like Substack provides, new publishers and new institutions can arise. Like, there's nothing about the New York Times's business model really that couldn't be done on Substack. Well, maybe like there's a large part of the advertising thing, but I think advertising is going to be less and less important in the future of these new institutions that are being built. And if, you know, in the free press has some advertising, so it's like, it's very possible, but it's not the infrastructure that is preventing the upholding of media standards. It's a lack of, well, let's say there's a huge opportunity for new institutions to be built with this new model on this infrastructure that preserves exactly the same media standards as the generations past institutions. When it comes to
if someone is spewing misinformation on Substack, how do you think about that? I mean, do you step in? Do you
the way we think about it, how you think about it, is a good question, because that is something that people have been, and publications and platforms have been, struggling with over the last couple of decades, the last decade in particular. And the problem with the approaches that the major platforms have tried to execute is that they haven't worked. If you look at the Google Trends results for misinformation, the word misinformation, from 2016 onwards, they've gone in a sort of steep line upwards. And despite billions of dollars being invested, despite extreme content moderation apparatuses being built, AI censorship machines being built, those problems, like the misinformation Google Trend result, has not slowed down, hasn't reversed especially. And the way we think about it is, it's not because the content moderation machines aren't good enough. It's because the systems are rewarding the wrong things. The system of the dominant media system, social media, rewards and encourages behaviors that keep people scrolling down on their feeds. And they don't reward or care about anything that has to do with the truth or helping people seek to understand each other. There has nothing to do at all with, like, trust. Is trust strengthened as a result of people spending their time here? And so they're trying to solve a problem, which is that their machines reward incendiary and sensationalist behaviors and content, this divisive stuff, with a different kind of problem, which is this content moderation apparatus that ends up arbitrarily censoring and deplatforming voices that shouldn't be, and result in an erosion of trust. So our approach is not to like take Facebook's content moderation approach and just try and improve it somehow. Our approach is to create an entirely different system that with a different reward structure. So that the way to win the game on Substack is not to go viral or get people glued to the screen for a little bit longer. The way to win the game on Substack as a publisher is to reward the trust and respect the attention of your subscribers over time. Then you might get paid in a paid subscription. That's how you support the work you're doing. And Substack can only win. We're not trying to play those engagement games that those other social media companies are playing. We can only win if you get a paid subscription. And so we're trying to create a system that drives people into deep relationships that are sustained over time. And those relationships are basically based on trust. A subscription is a proxy for a trust relationship. That doesn't mean that some bad guys won't win or some bad guys won't publish bad things. There will be some of that. It's the internet. Substack is still like an index fund of the internet. But the resulting culture from this different kind of system is so much different from those other places. And you feel it if you get the Substack app and spend some time in the Substack app. It feels totally different to Twitter.
It feels a lot cleaner, a lot safer, a lot, yes, very different, especially than Twitter today.
Right. And it's a system that we're like, has a way to reward quality and integrity, and the other systems don't.
Speaking of Twitter and X, you actually worked for Elon Musk at Tesla before you were a part of Substack. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was 10 years ago now. That experience was cool.
You wrote a book about him too, I believe.
I wrote a book about Tesla catalyzing the transition to electric cars and renewable energy. Yeah, that was in like 2014. I started there. Tesla had just came out that year with the dual motor car. They had just completed the supercharger network that crossed the country so people could drive from New York to LA without having to park the car overnight anywhere. They could charge it along the way for free. And I got to be inside that as Tesla was building this historically great and interesting company. And that was a crazy time. I got to work with Elon and see him up close. And that comes with all sorts of highs and all sorts of lows. Ultimately I decided I'd be much happier being a journalist rather than being on the communications team at a company like Tesla, but I'm really grateful for the experience and I took a hell of a lot from it.
So when Elon came knocking in 2023 to try to buy Substack, what were those conversations like and what made you say no?
We were about to launch Notes, which is the discussion and discovery feed in the Substack app, and has a lot of similarities aesthetically with Twitter. We don't have any ads in there, but it's a different kind of game. It's a game to try and maximize deep relationships, maximize subscriptions rather than maximize addiction to the feed. We gave him a heads up that we're launching this thing because we thought people might interpret it as like a Twitter killer. And he had recently taken over Twitter and was looking for a CEO because he didn't want to be the CEO. And he got in his mind that maybe Chris would be an interesting CEO. Chris Best is my co-founder of Substack, a great product guy. And actually think that was a smart idea and that he saw the potential synergy between Twitter, which is short form discovery, and Substack, which is where the smart people were going to read long things and view long episodes and listen to podcast episodes and pay for them with subscriptions. He thought that could be an important part of the Twitter business model. But we were just not convinced. We were not trying to use Substack to solve the problems of the old model, which is what in our minds Twitter represents. We wanted to build an entirely new ecosystem with new rules. And so even though he came to Chris and said, how about you come in and be the CEO and you Substack can be part of Twitter. It was still called Twitter in those days. We didn't want to be part of that. And he was trying to do this in a hurry after we gave him the heads up about the launch of Notes, which was about to happen. And we said, well, we don't want to talk about this right now. We're going to launch Notes and focus on this. Then we did launch Notes. The Twitter community did freak out and call it a Twitter killer. We're like, wait, this is like not going to take over Twitter tomorrow. And instead of trying to continue to romance us, he decided to try and nuke and kill Substack. So he blocked Substack in every imaginable way on Twitter at that time.
And that was ultimately resolved, right?
No.
In terms of nuking, I mean, I feel like I could click a Substack on X.
He backtracked on several of the key things. Like at one point, you couldn't search for the word Substack on Twitter. It would just turn up results from newsletter. He heavily suppressed links and I think some key Substack accounts. But now we just have the same suppression that X applies to any outside publication.
Got it.
So yeah, you can click on a Substack link and go to Substack from X and that's fine. It's just that system, again, they don't want people to leave the feed. So that system is not favoring any publication or any writer or any creator. It's actually kind of hostile to them. It gives them a place to play and get attention within their system, but it won't let them take their audience outside it or gain or build their own independence outside of X.
And how do you think about AI and journalism? There's been a lot of discussion around does it hurt journalism? Could it help journalists? Forget about Substack for a second. How are you thinking about just journalism overall in AI?
I can't forget about Substack. I think this is an important.
Okay. Well. Yeah.
There's a lot to be seen, right? This is the dawn of a revolution, and we don't know exactly how it's all going to play out. But in the moment, I see some of this as being extremely useful as a tool for journalists. Like I've written essays where I use Claude, the Anthropic agent, as a thought partner and editor and help me work on the structure of the piece, help me test my metaphors, tell me where there's gaps, help me rewrite sentences I'm having trouble with. And I'll write that piece with Claude as my partner, and then I'll give it to a human editor at Substack who are then going through the human process. And it results in something much better, and it speeds me up in the process of it, and it helps me make something that's really strong and good. And I think there's any number of expressions of those kinds of superpowers that the AIs can give you, like transcripts of podcast episodes, like professionally produced clips from your video show that can then be spread across the internet. And Substack is building these tools to help writers and creators into the platform. Ultimately, though, I think some forms of journalism, AIs are going to be able to do better, like maybe sports report, like straight up and down sports reports. But the things that require heart are going to go up in the value. The way it matters to you that there's another human on the other end of the line, which is the Substack model. It's not like there's a shortage of people writing about politics in the world. Yet, Substack came along as pretty new in the media environment, and politics is by far the biggest and most lucrative category on Substack because people are not looking for like politics information. They're looking for analysis, commentary, viewpoints from people who they trust. And one of the reasons that they trust them is that they're humans. they know that there's a human with skin in the game standing behind the stuff that they're producing. And I think in the future where AI can do more of the jobs, these jobs of giving culture to each other and trusting each other as humans are going to go up in value and become a larger part of the economy. And so I feel pretty good actually about the future prospects for culture makers and journalists and other types of creatives. I think that people are going to really value the human to human relationship.
And I imagine you subscribe to this belief that Jessica Lessen has talked about, that the future of news is niche, not generalist. It's in.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Is the free press niche kind of, is
they have a point niche? They have a point of view. I guess they're generalist with a point of view, I guess having a personality.
Yeah, I think having a perspective is going to be helpful, and that you, the media will be rebundled in many various ways, and we're in an unbundling moment at the moment, and the unbundling is happening in such a way that it creates these new media relationships at the atomic level. And the atomic level could be like, oh, it's a niche, it's a specific part of a specific trade or a specific, you know, subject and category or a specific voice or a specific perspective. So yeah, I think it's a fair comment.
And you know, in 2024, Donald Trump gets elected again as president. Substack continues to grow. Is there more activity and money on the resistance part of Trump or on the pro-Trump side of the aisle?
I mean, this cycles depending on what's happening in politics. So we've seen both. We've seen a lot of like pro-Trump voices emerge who felt like they weren't being well represented in the dominant media, and their audiences come to support them. And now we're in a big moment where it's like a lot of like anti-Trump voices, some of whom don't feel well represented by the dominant media, and some are spinning out of places like the Washington Post or CNN and bringing a lot of support with them as they say the things that they feel like they're not fully able to say in the other places. So in this current moment, it's a big anti-Trump wave on Substack, but wait 5 minutes and it will change.
And quickly, how many subscribers does Substack creators make more than $1 million a year on the platform?
Oh, I don't think we can say that number. We don't disclose that number.
We don't disclose. I've read
a surprisingly high number to someone like me who never thought of like journalists as like massive wealth create or wealth hoarders.
and what about just the total number of paying subscribers? You disclose that. You disclose, I think, 5 million
subscriptions, more than 5 million, comfortably, right? More than 5 million. And it's accelerating. That growth is accelerating. The 4 million mark happened sort of 4 or 5 months before that 5 million threshold was crossed. And then there's something like 50,000 publishers make any kind of money on Substack.
And last question. Where do you think Substack goes from here? Do you think it'll go public one day?
It could do. We're not so much focused on like, do we become public? What we're focused on is growing the network so that there are, instead of there being 5 million paid subscriptions, there are 50 million paid subscriptions or 500 million one day, because we think that this kind of media system is better. It gives much more power and ownership to writers and creators and publishers, and it gives better quality media to the consumers. And it lessens the vice grip that the social media giants have on culture. So we're trying to make this a real force, and we're just getting started.
Well, congratulations. I love it as a consumer. I love it as a writer. And I think it's a great force for journalism. So thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Andrew. I'm really glad to hear that. Thanks for hosting me.